Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope, there we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
Fourth and final hour, Felger and Maz. Our thanks to Chris Casper of the Globe for joining us as he does every Friday. I'll just tell you quickly, this hour of Felger and Maz is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they do not. PlanetFitness.com. You can check them out there. Paul Perillo's in studio, replacing Felger, who's out today. And Murray here to give us headlines, although he and Gasper are conspiring in the hallway as we speak. So Paul is here. And we'll take your calls over the balance of the hour here as we wrap up the week. And then, obviously, I will still be here for the baseball reporters from 6 to 7. We'll get to a lot of the Red Sox then. Paul, anything you want to add to the conversation?
No. Thoughtless. Totally.
Okay, there you go. So, again, we've touched on a lot of things. You know, I wanted to get to Jaylen Brown with Chris, too. There's just too much with the Patriots game to do that. Jaylen Brown had some interesting comments, but that is on the table if you want to go there. Certainly the Red Sox, all of it, and the Patriots from last night. So our buddy Wayne from Grafton, we'll kick it off with him this hour. Wayne, what do you got, buddy?
First of all, Murray, don't lose the sunglasses. If the people don't like it, screw it. And Maz, what the hell is Porcello doing sliding into second base head first? Big deal. You got a hit. Whoopee. Stay at first base. What are we going to have? Pomegranate take your place? And if Edelman is out for 4 weeks, yeah, what's the worst that's going to happen? Maybe 2-2? And, you know, I can't think of anything else to say after that.
No problem, Wayne. Have a good weekend. Appreciate it. So, look, I'm glad he brought up the Porcello thing where he head first line into second
base. Those are the kinds of things that really drive you crazy, right?
Yes. I mean, how stupid could you be? Like, all you need to do is get a pitcher hurt by going head first into second base. And I'm willing to bet, like, I wonder if the next night that was related to Eovaldi. Because Eovaldi did not take the bat off his shoulder the whole game. Did you notice that?
I didn't.
Now, he walked at one point. His first at bat, I think he walked and got on. But he did not swing at a pitch the rest of the night. And I think that, and remember that the Red Sox held Sale out of the series in Philadelphia because they didn't want him batting.
Yeah.
So I think the Red Sox are officially in, like, scratch the days off the wall mode. We are gearing up for the postseason.
They should be.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Yeah, they're 10 up. So I don't blame them the least bit for doing that. Jeff is in Worcester. Jeff, what do you got?
Hey, I honestly just wanted to talk about Adrian Claiborne.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought he was – I was excited about this guy when we signed him. Was it a trade? I forget.
No, he signed
but
him.
We signed him. He looked absolutely awesome. He was beating his man consistently and even against the first team. And I was just really excited to see him play. And he was disrupting the backfield constantly. So I think that's a great sign for our defense going forward.
Okay, so, Paul, look, the defense last night was notable. They were bringing a lot of pressure. A lot of those guys were getting home. There were blitzes, all kinds of stuff going on. But Claiborne in particular was eye-catching.
He was beating his man. He's been really good throughout the time here in training camp, in the two preseason games. I think he's shown the ability to get the edge and get after the passer. We'll see if it translates to the regular season. You know, I said at the beginning of the show, they really didn't have NFL defensive ends last year. It was Trey Flowers and a bunch of other guys. This year, it looks like they've really upgraded that spot. They have some young guys like Wise and Rivers that look like they've made some progress. They bring in a veteran like Claiborne that could factor into the mix. Much different story.
So, look, I know Juwan Bentley is one of the eye-popping stories and notable stories at camp and preseason. And I like him, too, based on what I've seen so far, and we'll see how that one shakes out. Claiborne was the best player on the field last night.
He was excellent.
I thought he was dynamite last night. Again, I don't know how that translates. I'm just telling you, in the context of one preseason game, I thought he was dominant last night. Sully's in Boston. What do you got? Sully! All right, he's not there, so we can drop his ass and get rid of Sully. And we'll go to Willie's in a car, wants to talk about Julian Edelman. What do you got, Willie?
Hey, guys, I just tuned in. I'm not sure if anyone's brought this up today, but I'm curious why it struck me as kind of funny that Edelman would be playing. I know he's going to get his reps in and stuff, but in years past, we've always sort of tried to protect Gronk or whoever, and knowing he's going to be out for the first four games, why not ensure he's going to make it to game five and, you know, rest him in the preseason?
Okay, so Edelman was on the field last night, made a handful of catches, I think, right? There's a few of them in there.
Yeah, I just think you have to get him some work. I mean, he's not going to be able to get any of that work in September. I don't think you want him to go all that time really being inactive. The injury concern is always going to be there. You know, you play these guys in the preseason and it feels like you're rolling the dice when you do it all the time. But you can't just have him just sit around and not do anything when he's going to do that for an entire month. He's not going to be able to practice with the team. He won't be at the facility throughout September. So you have to do something to get him ready.
Okay, how did he look to you last night, Paul? And how has he looked to you all camp?
Yeah, it's funny because these are two different things. I think he's looked great. I think he looks as quick as he's normally is. I think he darts in and out. He's dropped a couple of passes in training camp a little bit. Didn't drop any last night. I thought he looked like Julian Edelman. But you talk to him, and he does not feel that way. He feels like he's still thinking about the knee. It's not completely back. It's always on his mind. So it's two kind of contrasting things. I think he's looked great.
Chris is in Boston. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about Brady's downfield throws. And I know he opened up the first drive with a couple of short passes. You know, James White was pretty significant there. But it looked like he tried to open up downfield after those few short passes, and it was atrocious. And I know last year, I think he was in the top three in terms of yards or 20-plus yard passes downfield. But and I don't know if it's the receiving core or what. They're just not getting separation. But he looked really, really bad throwing the ball downfield.
Okay, so again, never really been the strength of his game, right, Paul? But did you notice any significant change or drop in that area last night?
I didn't, but I will say that the two shots that they took last night down the field, Dorsett and Hogan, were both covered like blankets.
See, I didn't think either one of those guys was open.
Nope. No, I think he tried to give Dorsett a chance to come back and make a play, one of those sort of stop fades. And I think Hogan, I think he just said, let me just throw it out there and see if he can run under it. And in both cases, I think Darby was in coverage on both balls. He's probably their best corner. And I thought he had them both covered really well, and there was no chance for completions. I don't look at it necessarily as something that Brady can't do. But I wonder who on this team has the capability of getting downfield the way Cooks did last year. I don't think they have that.
Yeah, neither one of those balls had a chance last night. Derek's in Foxborough. Derek, go ahead.
Well, man, you're brutal with the phones. I don't think Felger has ever kept me that long. But I just want to get your thoughts on when it comes playoff time. Do you think Core is going to have the balls to bench Jackie Bradley, put JD in the outfield, and then DH either Pierce or Nunez, because you just can't have that black hole at the bottom of your lineup in the playoffs.
Hey, Derek, did it ever occur to you that maybe Felger's easy with the phones?
Well, that's good.
Okay, well, you know, he does it that way. I do it mine. What do you want me to tell you? The as it pertains to the Red Sox lineup, is Cora going to have the balls to sit Jackie Bradley? If they get to the World Series, he's not going to have a choice. So someone's going to sit. You're going to have no DH for some of those games.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any shot he's going to play Jackie Bradley over JD Martinez in the World Series. I'd be stunned if he did that.
No, but I think I would be stunned if he consistently sat Jackie Bradley in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, and they don't need to do it in the playoffs. Because, again,
you don't want to do what he wants to do and get another bat in the lineup?
What, Nunez?
Well, Pierce.
So it depends on, to me, it depends on the circumstance and who the pitcher is and what ballpark you're playing in. And I think you could pick your spots with that, yes. If you're going up against a left-hander, I like the idea of having Pierce in there. No question about it.
You think he would do it? You think he would sit Bradley?
Yeah.
Lefty on the mound, he'd sit Bradley and get Pierce.
Yeah, I do. In the right ballpark, he would do it.
I think he should do that.
Yeah, I think he would. And I'll tell you what, I've come to this realization on Cora, and I don't know, maybe some of it, Paul, is because, I mean, I remember Cora as a player, okay? And I like Cora. He's a good guy. He's a smart guy. The thing that people don't see about Cora that, you know, isn't apparent right on the surface the first time you or unless you really get to know him, there's some edge there. And I don't think Cora is afraid of making necessarily a controversial decision when he thinks it's in the best interest of the team. Now, will he do it? Now, the proof's going to be in the pudding. When it comes time to make the move, will he make the move? I don't know. I mean, there's no way to predict that. But I can tell you that based on his personality from the past, I don't think Cora's intimidated by that part of it. I still think that he's going to put David Price in the bullpen. I mean, I think they're leaning that way. Adam's in Framingham. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, I just wanted to actually ask you guys about Adrian Claiborne. I know one of the callers recently mentioned how well he played last night, but last night he played on the same side as Trey Flowers, and I'm wondering do you think that he's going to be as productive if he had to move over to the other side? They both played on the blind side, so I just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, actually, Trey Flowers has worked on the other side. He's the one who's moved during the course of training camp. He's played on the defensive left side while Claiborne's been on the right side. So, Claiborne's been the guy. He's right. He rushes the blind side, but Trey Flowers moved. I don't think it's that big of an issue, and I think that you could see some or both. I think you've also seen some Dietrich Wise in that spot instead of Claiborne. I think that they've had Claiborne as both sort of a sub-package guy and an every-down guy in training camp. So I think with Flowers out, you don't really know it, because I assume that Flowers is going to be in full-time when he's healthy. We'll see how that unfolds. But Flowers has been lined up on the defensive left side in training camp.
So, Paul, I can't remember who said this last night, whether I was, because at one point I was listening to a little bit on the radio, and then I switched over and was, watching it on TV and watching Bob Soucy and Zolak do the game. But at some point, somebody made the comment that the Patriots aren't rotating as much on the defensive line. And when I say rotating, shuffling is a better way to put it. That guys who play outside would move inside.
Yeah.
And that now the roles are much more clearly defined and the tackles are on the interior and the ends are on the ends and even playing the same side. Have you noticed any of that, and could that help them?
Not really. To be honest with you, I've seen a lot of Wise lining up at end and going inside. Adam Butler's a guy who's been on the inside. I've seen Hightower, we didn't see him last night, but we saw him in the first game, lined up on the edge, lined up in his normal sort of off the line spot in the middle. I've seen some mixing and matching with personnel groups, and I think that they'll always have elements of those. Now, I think Rob Ninkovich talked about that a little bit last night. What I do agree with him about is maybe there's a little bit less of asking so many different personnel groups to do so many different things, and maybe they might sort of streamline that because I think they have more talent. I think. Again, I don't want to get too lost in what I saw, with 8 sacks in a meaningless exhibition game. But I think that they probably have more guys that they feel better about, whereas they had guys that I thought could only really do one. Like Landon Roberts, to me, I think he has ability to do specific things, like plug in the run. But you ask him to play in space and cover backs, I think he's going to be in trouble. I think Bentley might be a guy that can do a little bit more of both. So by definition, you don't necessarily need to swap out as much, based on the situation. And that is a simplistic one. And maybe, again, putting a little bit too much on a rookie's plate based on a couple of exhibition games. I think they have a chance to have fewer guys involved that maybe can do more things, if that makes sense.
Okay, your call.
Because they have better talent.
Your calls with Paul Perillo of Patriots Football Weekly on Agenda Free Friday next. Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Bulls pressured by Claiborne. Strip sack. Ball's loose. Pats have it. Bentley on the run. In the clear. Touchdown, Patriots!
There you go. Impressive. Could have used that last year.
That'll get you noticed. This kid's been making plays since day one of training camp.
51. Boiler up, baby.
Must look like a young Gerard Mayo out there. I don't think Gerard's ever been that fast.
If it were a real game, that's the play we'd be talking about today. That would have been the game changer in Foxborough last night. Patriots, Adrian Claiborne, newcomer, causes the fumble. Juwan Bentley, newcomer, picks it up, runs it in for a touchdown. Patriots go up 17-0 on the Eagles. They end up winning 37-20. And that's the play that they didn't make last year. I mean, let's face it, they didn't have playmakers on defense. Even when they went through that stretch of the year, Paul, where they played better, to me, it had as much to do with opposing offenses as it did anything else.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, when they got to the Super Bowl, we all saw it. Nick Foles lit him up.
I didn't even necessarily need a sack, a fumble return, or anything like that, man. It's just, force a punt. Maybe. Please.
They did it once in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Second half, though. Please force
no,
a
punt. Yeah, right. That's right. Mm. So, look, it can't be much worse than it was last year if you go by the Super Bowl. And let that be evidence or a lesson to you, Murray, too, that what you can see during the regular season can be very, very different than what you see in the postseason.
Well, sure.
Once they got to the Super Bowl, it really was like they reverted back to about week three. I mean, they totally went backwards because they got exposed. And so the Eagles were able to do to them what a lot of teams couldn't because they didn't have the personnel, and the Eagles did. Andrew in New Bedford wants to bring up something that I want to touch on. I think that we all noticed last night and we discussed during the broadcast. Andrew, go ahead. What do you got?
Hey, happy Friday, gentlemen. So I, like a lot of people last night, probably noticed Tom Brady's new helmet and continuing to wonder why he was wearing it when a blinding flash of the obvious hit me. This is definitely Giselle in her whole interview talking about the concussions that he had. I think the implications here are twofold. First, Giselle's pressure for Tom Brady and his health and retirement is real. And I think that 2-year negotiation that he has with her right now is set in stone. And the second thing is how it ties into TB12 and him and Alex Guerrero's claim to health and how much that their method can prevent injuries like this. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that topic.
Okay, so again, Zolak was making a lot of this during the broadcast line that Brady was wearing the new helmet, mm-hmm. right? And he's grandfathered under league rules to wear his existing helmet through this current season, but he would have to change next year. Next year, he'd be required to wear the new helmet. And so he wore it last night in the game.
Yeah.
And some people have taken this to mean or suggest that Brady's already prepping for 2019, so he has every intention of playing. Do you draw any connection there whatsoever, Paul?
I don't. I'm not sure why that would mean anything. If he wants to play in 2019, then he could get used to the new helmet in 2019 if that's what he chose to do. I do feel, I mean, again, not this is not coming from any basis of fact. You know, we haven't had any conversations with Tom about it. What Tom said was that he's had conversations with the equipment manager, Brendan Murphy, who's done a lot of work with Tom individually, does a lot of the stuff on the field with him. Brendan Murphy has been really trying to get him to go to this helmet. And I think he tried it Sunday or Monday for the first time. And he started wearing it the last couple of days of practice that we got to see. And he wore it in the game Thursday. I think the caller might be right. I think it might be a little pressure from Giselle to take care of yourself.
Murray?
I think it could be all of that. It could be pressure from his wife. It could be from the equipment manager. Look, this is going to be the standard. It could be him thinking forward. Okay, you know, why don't I just get ahead of this? Because they are going to mandate it as of 2019. You have to wear this helmet. Overall, I just think that it looks weird. He looks like he was floating in the thing. He looked like the Great Gazoo from the Flintstones.
Does look a little different.
It's gigantic.
I just don't understand.
He's either the Great Gazoo or Brett Gardner. Like, yeah. It's one of the two. It's just he got this giant head. It is like a giant coconut. He looks like Bartolo Colon out there, for crying out loud.
I don't get the step, the leap to, well, this is he's going to play in 2019. So he's getting used to it now so he can use it in 2018.
Well,
right?
We all need things to talk about.
Well, see, that's right? What I think, Paul.
So you get used to it now. You know, you get used to it in July of 2019 so you can wear it in 2019. Like, I don't get that part of it. I don't take that step. But Jim, you're right. Who feels more useless hours on the radio than we used to on Patriots.com? Yeah, we all have to have things to talk about, and this is one of them.
Correct me if I'm wrong. There's only less than a handful of outliers. It's him, it's Drew Brees, and who? Isn't there one more?
Gostkowski had an old one on last night. Okay. I don't know if it's different. And I'm not sure I understand exactly how the rules are unfolded. I haven't read anything really about it. I thought that they were sort of outlawing all of the old helmets, and they were going to 2019. You had to have one of these sort of newer helmets with a sensor and all that on it. But I was told that that's not necessarily, it depends on how old the helmet is. And I'm not exactly sure, but clearly they're going to try the player safety.
Route. I'm glad you brought up Gostkowski. Okay. Cause I want to get to him in a minute. Mike's in Southampton. This guy's been on hold for a while and it's agenda free Friday. So I'm going to allow this call, but it's not typically something we would get into. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, Maz?
Yep.
Yeah, my question's about the Red Sox, and it's about their bat boy. Because
okay.
I go to the games, I sit in the eighth row right by the on-deck circle, and this guy's got to be 30 years old. He's been there 10 years, and he's got no enthusiasm. He just kind of, when he gives a kid a ball, there's no... He acts like it's really a pain to him to do it. And the ball girls, they run over and they kind of smile to give the kid... He's just lifeless. I've never seen him run.
Mike, I'll tell you what. I said to you earlier, Paul, if we were in Philly today, we would be doing, you know, the Philadelphia defense on that screen pass to James White. That call right there, ripping the ball boy, that is the kind of thing you would get in Philadelphia. That is. Yeah. That is the kind of goal.
You're right.
I mean, so let me tell you that the quote-unquote ball boys at Fenway, or bat boys, I don't know which one he was talking
about. There's a bat boy, he said.
Okay, so I would tell you, typically, these are guys that also work in the clubhouse. Okay, so they're not like 13-year-old kids. They are grown men who have jobs that also relate to the equipment and all the needs of the players in the clubhouse. And frankly, I think those guys work their asses off. I saw it firsthand. A lot of those guys do. They bust their chops. And so it's not an easy life.
I used to play cards with one of these dudes way back in the day, 15, 16 years ago. And he said the worst part of his job, we would pepper him every single week. Like, come on, what's the worst thing? Give us some stories. And finally, he's like, fine, I'll give you one. He used to have to put on gloves that would go up to his elbows after Manny took a dump. Because Manny would wipe with hand towels. He wouldn't use TP like a normal human being. He would wipe with hand towels and then clog the toilets, and he would have to unclog the toilet and get the hand towels out.
Murray, do we really need to tell that story on the air? That is disgusting.
Well, that just goes to show you what some of these guys are having to go through. It's a tough gig. So for the guy who's mad that this is the disgruntled ball boy, he's got a lot going on in his life. Who knows what's going on in that clubhouse and what kind of mess he has to clean up.
See, and Red Sox fans, Paul, think that I'm the bad guy because I get annoyed that they don't beat good competition. And that guy wants to rip the ball boy, right? But I'm the bad guy. Bill's in Beverly. Bill, quickly, go.
All right. Here's my point. I don't want to be Mr. Negative, but if Brady goes down, who the hell have we got for a backup quarterback? Hoyer can't cut the mustard. In the second half last night, he couldn't get a goddamn first down. And nice. The team just... So who the hell... I guess Belichick will have to watch the waiver wire.
Hey, Bill.
Something like that.
Bill, let me ask you a question. Did you have the same concern when Ryan Mallett was the backup?
Yeah.
You did? Okay, all right. Well, at least you're consistent.
I did too. I'm with Bill and Beverly.
Well, because we get a lot of these calls now. I feel like we get more now, Murray, than we did before, because you had it pretty good when Garoppolo was here, right? I mean, let's face it. Bill himself said the day they made the Garoppolo trade that he thought he had the best quarterback situation in the league. Now, assuming the health of Foles, that's probably Philadelphia, but whatever, right? But I feel like we're getting more calls about the backup now. If Brady goes down, are you going to find some guy out there who can actually keep you in it and win a Super Bowl?
No, they're doomed.
Of course. Who gives a rat's ass who the backup is?
I don't know if it's so much about Garoppolo when he was here and people feeling safe about that. Of course they would after they saw him play the six quarters.
Yeah, I would say the last 2 years, well, you know, was actually the last year and a half because they traded him at the deadline. I felt great about that. But before that,
yeah, who knew?
I had no idea what Garoppolo was. I agree with you, Maz. Ryan Mallett never did anything on the practice field to instill any confidence. Castle, I didn't envision him having the kind of year that he had in 2008.
And they didn't make the playoffs.
I know, but they still won. They still went 10-5 in the games that he started. He played well.
Yeah, but the point is,
you're right. They didn't make the playoffs.
No, if Brady goes down, you're screwed.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter who the backup is.
I think it's the fragility that comes with his age at 41. I mean, if he goes down, you know, they're screwed. And people's eyes work. They've watched Brian Hoyer in these two preseason games. He blows.
BTH?
Murray hates Hoyer.
Oh, it's unbelievable. He's such a good guy, too. Do you ever talk to him?
Oh,
you wouldn't talk like that if you had met him.
I've heard the same thing about David Price. That's why I hide behind the microphone.
I can't imagine that that's accurate on the latter one. There.
I liked Hoyer when he was here the first time, but I told you, I did have some.
But not
of,
as a player.
No, I liked him as a backup.
Oh.
Ugh.
When he was here the first time.
He just doesn't have, I mean, he's a backup. For a reason.
Yeah. No, the first time he was here, I thought he was a perfectly fine backup. Now I think somehow he's getting worse, which is incredible when you think of where he started from. But that is, again, another story for another day. We're not going to spend a lot of time on the backup quarterback. The kicker, however, the kicker's another story. I'll explain to you when we come back after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
Sports Hub Headlines.
Well, despite winning last night's preseason game 37-20 over the reigning champion Philadelphia Eagles, some bad news today for the Patriots as their top draft pick, rookie offensive tackle Isaiah Wynn, ended up suffering a torn Achilles in last night's game. Now, Wynn expected to miss the entire season. Also, according to a report from The Athletic's Jeff Howe, running back Rex Burkhead reportedly has a slight tear in his knee. That's what's forced Burkhead to miss the Patriots' first two preseason games. And it obviously sounds bad, but according to this report, Burkhead's injury relatively minor, and the team does not expect him to sideline him for the regular season. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport first with an update on Eagles quarterback Nick Foles, who left last night's game when he hurt his shoulder. Tests today show Foles okay, and he and the team do not expect any prolonged recovery. Red Sox, they return to action tonight, beginning a seven-game homestand with the first of three against the Tampa Bay Rays. Ryan Johnson on the mound for the Red Sox, making his ninth start of the year. The team has also activated second baseman Ian Kinsler from the 10-day disabled list. Also, in a corresponding move, they placed third baseman Rafael Devers on the 10-day DL with a left hamstring strain, retroactive to yesterday. Headlines are brought to you by Cambridge Savings Bank. They're financing deals for corporate clients with flexibility at every turn. Learn more at cambridgesavings.com. They're an equal housing lender. I'm Jim Murray for Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 Sports Hub. Next update at 6 o'clock.
Felger and Mass.
Wow.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Okay, welcome back to Felger and Mass. We'll wrap it up with your phone calls here, but I did say to you guys, I had a something about Steven Gostkowski popped into my head last night. Murray, you're smirking over there because you know my history with the kicker.
Yeah, me too, and I wonder if you're going to go the same way I went because I got mocked by Beetle for what I said last night about him.
Okay, so here's what I would tell you, and for people who missed it. Early in the game, Patriots kicked off. I want to say it was after they scored their first touchdown, right? So they kicked off. And there was a blown coverage on the left side of the coverage team, and Gostkowski had to make the tackle on the left sideline. And when he made the tackle afterward, they indicated that he was shaken out. Now, look, we saw a replay later. He took a foot to the head.
Yeah.
And I can't remember.
His head kind of snapped back.
He got kicked in the head, basically. Yeah. And I don't remember if he hit his helmet on the ground as well, too. But he got kicked in the head. But at the time, they had to take him into the locker room. And I half wondered if maybe he went through the concussion protocol or something.
I actually think he had a back problem.
Okay.
To be honest with you.
And then he was sort of straightening out his neck. And so maybe you're right, Paul. But the second... Now, look, I have sat here in the last couple of years, Gostkowski has missed some big kicks in the postseason. The extra point in Denver. Hell, it happened again last year. The field goal that got screwed up in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, field goal and an extra point last year. Extra point against Atlanta in that Super Bowl and an extra point in the AFC Championship game.
I mean, so there have been a lot of those. And so I have sort of sat here and said, I don't have faith in any kicker. But I sort of always wonder about Gostkowski in a big spot. And then he got hurt on the kick coverage yesterday, and my heart stopped. Is that bad of me?
Maz, then you and I had the same reaction. Beetle laughed at me. He's like, you don't even like him. And I was like, no, I know. I mostly haven't. But my reaction was like, oh, this would be a massive loss. Well, no. So it's funny.
Isn't that brutal?
It's funny because the contradiction is like, I don't trust him in a big moment in huge games, whether it's the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. But there is something to be said about consistency with kickers. This is his 13th season, I think, he's going into. And the guy is, he is mostly nails, especially on big, deeper kicks. And so I was thinking,
mostly nails. And this is,
I held my breath.
You guys are unbelievable.
Well, no. So I was thinking, I'm like, so what are they going to have to go out in the street and find a Nick Novak or a Graham Gano or some geek like this? Like, we're going to be screwed.
And that's what it is. So here's, I would say two things. Like, the idea of having to go out on the street for a kicker scared the crap out of me. Like, ooh. Whatever criticisms I have of Gostkowski, he's better than freaking Graham Gano.
Right, so that's what it was.
Or Nick Novak, as you just said. It scared the hell out of me, Murray. I did. I almost swallowed my tongue.
That's so funny.
Happened. I recognize it's totally hypocritical.
Right.
I went, oh my God, maybe I like this guy better than I thought I did.
Of course you do.
And.
Of course you do.
And I would say, to Steven Gostkowski in particular, if he's listening, this is proof. Don't take it personally. I don't like all kickers because it's the position in general that I don't trust. As soon as I saw him go to the locker room, I went, oh, my God, no. Like, and I was stunned.
Because you realize,
felt
even though you get frustrated when he misses a kick as infrequently as they happen, you realize that he's one of the better kickers in the league.
Yeah.
Yes. And you
do.
And both of you know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just, it's that Maz and I have been particularly hard on him. That's so funny that you had that reaction, because it was the same thing. At that time, I was listening to the game going down to do the post game. I was like, oh, no. No, they can't afford to lose him. And I was like, what am I saying? Like, what? Oh, no. Then I realized, oh, yeah, no, he's nails. And the thought of having to go out in the street and finding some stiff, oh, boy, they'd be screwed.
It scared the hell out of me, Murray. I was right there with you. And as soon as you started to talk, I said he had the same thing. He did. It's like it was this moment of panic. Like, oh, no. Like, now what? Now we're going to have, like, Matt Barr, 65-year-old Matt Barr, come in here to kick again or whatever? It scared the crap out of me.
He got hurt one year. Shane Graham came in. I think he was perfect.
Yeah. Melissa's in Uxbridge. What do you got, Melissa?
A little Patriot dust, Maz.
Oh, Maz. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. Glad to call. Listen, the defense, they broke down in the Super Bowl. I'm so glad you recognized that. They were exposed. It was awful. But for God's sake, Brady was the best player. He had the best game. He threw for 500 yards. 500 yards.
Yeah, so what's that got to do with anything?
Because you are a hypocrite.
He wasn't even the best quarterback in the game. It wasn't.
Okay. But, honey, you're a hypocrite across the board. You've been beating on Brady all summer, like it's the worst thing in the world. And you got the best. You've had the best. You've got the best. We continue with the best. So your heart stops when Gostkowski goes down. So we're going to continue with this Garoppolo crap. You drive me nuts, but okay. I love you.
No worries, Melissa. You have a good weekend, girlfriend.
I like her.
A lot of sass there.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. So, look, for all the stuff that I told you, Brady pissed me off this summer because I thought he acted like a 3-year-old. I never said he sucked as a quarterback. Ever, ever, ever. So don't confuse them. I don't like the way he's acting now, but I've never said that the guy's a bum. Not in a million years have I ever said that. Steve's in Taunton. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Tony. What's going on? Hey, you know what? Anybody who don't like Tony Maz, let me tell you something. Here's a great quote. I know he's a Super Bowl champion, but Doug Peterson looks like a cheesy tennis pro. That's one of the great lines. That's typical Tony.
What do you got, Steve? You want to talk about the defense? Go ahead.
Yes, I want to talk about the defense, Tony. You know, the Patriots might have got 8 sacks, 2 turnovers, but let me tell you, 350 yards, really? That's terrible. I mean, they got to put something together there, Tony. I mean, you could ask Paul, but that's got to be a little bit better than that.
Okay, Steve, I'm not worried about yardage totals yet in the preseason. No. Although, Paul, you said you noted that Belichick did say something about that.
Yeah, it was the first question of the conference call today. They were talking about the 8 sacks and the pressure and, you know, how they got upfield so often. And, you know, I talked to you about this before I even had realized about that quote. Bill doesn't necessarily look at things the same way that, you know, you and I and a lot of other fans do. He's going to look at the entire picture, and he's going to look at the amount of big plays they allowed in the passing game last night. One of the things that he'll take away is that guy who ran the punt backwards to the 2-yard line, and then they threw a 57-yard pass out of the end zone in the first play.
Right.
That'll stick with him more than the 8 sacks. And, you know, people might get frustrated, like, well, don't let that, you know, make you afraid. They only scored 20 points. I mean, we think we all can agree. Philadelphia had opportunities to score a lot more points than that. When the strip sack, they were sort of on the march on that drive. It was a 54-yard return, but that was a strip sack. The ball, I mean, they were on inside the 40.
Sure.
They had another play that they turned the ball over on downs inside the 2, I think. They get no points on. So there were opportunities for Philadelphia to score more points than they did. And I think if you play defense like that consistently, well, I either get to the passer or they're going to have a 20-yard completion. That's not the way Bill wants to operate. So I understand what Steve's talking about. I mean, 350 yards to, what did you call him, Nate Sudfeld?
Yeah, whatever his name is. I mean, you know, who gives a rat's ass, seriously?
Tony calls Nate Sudfeld Pete.
So, Paul, you know what? I'm glad you
brought... That's a lot. It's a lot of yards. And I know it's meaningless yards at this time of year, just like the sacks are meaningless at this time of year.
So I want to touch on something else and you want to talk about picking at the Patriots on things that you would not necessarily deem at the top of the list of concerns, given some of the issues they've had here during the offseason and in camp early on and here early in the preseason. But I heard you mention this last night, and honestly, it was on my list before. Through the first couple of games here, how do you feel about their coverage units?
Well, they haven't been good. The coverage units haven't been good at all. The punt coverage was really shaky in the first game.
Brutal in the first game.
Kick coverage was really shaky last night.
And they were one of the best in the league on kick coverage last year.
And this is one that I totally blow off because it's the summer. There's a lot of moving parts there. They're mixing in. They're figuring out these young guys, new guys that are mixing. They're trying to figure out who can play. They'll look a lot better when the season comes.
Okay, so look, typically special teams is a strength of theirs, and I'd venture to guess that you're right. I mean, but in the first couple of games, it's been noticeable. The punt coverage in the first game was brutal.
It was bad.
It was brutal.
And the kick coverage was bad last night.
It was bad last night. That's right. So again, we're Agenda Free Friday. We've covered a lot of things here. Mike in the North End has a Red Sox call, wants to touch on someone that a lot of Red Sox fans have asked me about this year. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Tony. Durbin Feltman, the Sox.
Hey, Mike. This year. Mike, yeah. Just quick question. How old are you?
27.
Yeah, bull crap. I let him go.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah. I got news for you, Mike. Even I didn't sound like that when I was 27. Okay?
Is there a particular show that Mike should call, Maz?
Yeah, you want to call Adam Jones. Yeah. Although Jones was on the midday show today, I think, wasn't he? Oh, no, it was Hardy. Is Pac-Man in tonight? Is Pac-Man? No Pac-Man. Okay, so Mike, you want to wait till Monday, then call Adam Jones at 7 o'clock right here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. Let's go to, we can squeeze in one more here. Jeremy's in Wilmington. Jeremy, go fast.
Hey, I'm looking for wide receiver options. I know everyone's talking about Dez Bryant, but I got another knucklehead out there. How about Josh Gordon?
He's on Cleveland.
Jeremy? Okay, I'll let him go, too.
We're done with the calls now. You can always swing a trade.
We're done with the calls.
But no, I don't think that trade would make a lot of sense.
If the first kid that called the two calls ago was 13, that guy was like 17. Really. Again, Adam Jones, Monday night, 7 o'clock, 617-779-0985. Final word is next.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you are looking for the best deal on tires, there is only one place to go, Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
Nobody. There it is, Matt. So we have two pieces of sound to get to in the final word today. We will lead off with a fresh, squeaky mess that was put together by Hardy.
I think I know what this is.
Well, what if you take a guess.
I shouldn't let the cat out of the bag.
All right. So is Maz the squeakiest about the cycle? Mookie Betts' cycle.
Bingo.
Thursday night, Mookie Betts hit for the cycle. Did you enjoy it?
Nope. What's so special about that? Did he get bingo? Terrific. You get a single, double, triple, and home run in the same game. The cycle's what we're going to get geeked up about now? For what? Who's going to remember that? Who was the last guy to hit for the cycle, Murray?
And for the Red Sox?
Who cares? Tell me what's better, a cycle or two doubles, a triple, and a homer?
Two doubles, a triple, and a homer.
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't give a rat's ass about the cycle. I'm astonished that people still get geeked up. I still get geeked up. Jimmy was just talking in my ear. We're going to get excited about a cycle in a year where a team's going for 115 wins, where you get a guy who could win the Triple Crown, and we're going to get excited because some guy's able to ride his bike around the bases.
Bicycle. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Yeah!
Bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
Way to go, Lucky! We lost 12 to 5, but yeah!
Bicycle.
Oh, God, please. Worthless, utterly, completely worthless, on a list of baseball achievements that I could not give a rat's ass about, a flying f*** about. You can take the cycle and shove it. It is completely useless. Four-hit game. Yay, they just happen to be one of each. Whoop-de-f***ing-do. A cycle. Oh, my God, that's what we're going to get excited about? In season is a stupid-ass psycho? Pathetic.
I want to ride in where I like.
Loserville.
Seriously, though, and Murray, you know that that had nothing to do with Mookie Betts.
I know.
I have felt that way about the cycle forever.
Baseball bingos. Are you
totally. It's exactly what it is. Whoop-de-doo, rainbow.
Now, let's get to this.
What happened to you?
Too much. I've seen too many sports.
Let's relive a story I told just a short time ago about arguably the greatest right-handed hitter in Red Sox history.
This is called Instant Final Word. Mike's in Southampton. It's agenda-free Friday, so I'm going to allow this call.
Yeah, my question's about the Red Sox, and it's about their bat boy. And this guy's got to be 30 years old. He's been there 10 years,
And
he's got no enthusiasm. He just kind of, when he gives the kid a ball, there's no... He acts like it's really a pain to him to do it. He's just lifeless. I've never seen him run.
Mike, I'll tell you what. I said to you earlier, Paul, if we were in Philly today, we would be doing, you know, the Philadelphia defense on that screen pass to James White. That call right there, ripping the ball boy, that is the kind of thing you would get in Philadelphia. That is. That is the kind of goal.
You're right.
So let me tell you that the quote-unquote bat boys, they're not like 13-year-old kids. They are grown men who have jobs that also relate to the equipment and all the needs of the players in the clubhouse.
I used to play cards with one of these dudes way back in the day, 15, 16 years ago, and he said the worst part of his job, he used to have to put on gloves that would go up to his elbows after Manny took a dump. Because Manny would wipe with hand towels. He wouldn't use TP like a normal human being. He would wipe with hand towels and then clog the toilets, and he would have to unclog the toilet with and get the hand towels out.
Do we really need to tell that story on the air? That is disgusting.
Well, that just goes to show you what some of these guys are having to go through. It's a tough gig. So for the guy who's mad that this is the disgruntled ball boy, he's got a lot going on in his life. Who knows what's going on in that clubhouse? What kind of mess he has to clean up?
See, and Red Sox fans, Paul, think that I'm the bad guy because I get annoyed that they don't beat good competition. And that guy wants to rip the ball boy. Right? But I'm the bad guy.
I feel I have to bring this up because when I've told this story before, even in closed circles, I think people get it twisted. This isn't out of malice. The kid had to explain this to me. This guy I used to play cards with. He's like, because we were like, why does he do that? To screw with you? It's like, no, Manny Ramirez just did it because that's what he thought he wanted to wipe with. Because
he's different.
Yeah, he was different. Strange cat.
Oh, like, believe me, there were a lot of stories like that, Murray. I don't know if that one's true. I'd never specifically heard that one, but
right. Allegedly. I should have said that earlier. Yeah, allegedly. That's what
I like. Maz goes, I don't know if we needed to tell that story twice on the air.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah. That's all right. It is, you know, we push the envelope a little bit here on Felger and Maz. Paul Perillo, thank you for joining the show.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and our thanks to Mason Souza back there, Tom Carroll, Matt the intern for all their help today. We had all the regulars are out today except for me and Murray, right?
That's correct.
By the way, you guys aren't done yet. Baseball Reporters is next. We had a bunch of things to get into on the Red Sox. No commercials. Murray will get your headlines, and then we'll be back to talk baseball for the next hour. Don't go away.